Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, look, this week, as we know, saw a huge focus on the legacy of mother and baby homes in this country. Legislation was rushed through the Dáil to protect a database of information gathered by the recent Commission of Investigation and transfer it to the control of the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA. Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman said this move was necessary to ensure that the whole archive was not sealed for 30 years, as is currently required by the law. However, many survivors of the homes have expressed fear that the archive will be lost to them, although the minister committed on Friday to fix the problem. Meanwhile, calls continue for both an official state apology for the homes and the creation of a permanent memorial. As often happens when stories like this hit the headlines, people emerge to tell their own stories of the legacy of these homes. And I'm joined now on the line by Fionn Davenport, who is, of course, one of this country's best known travel journalists and broadcasters. Good morning, Fionn.
Morning to you, Miriam.
Listen, thanks so much. I've interviewed you before, actually, many times, and I never knew your own story. And thanks for sharing it with us this morning. Tell me your story, Fionn.
So I am an adopted child. I was born in 1968. And until I was in my mid-30s, I knew that I had been adopted. I knew I was adopted since I was a very young boy. My adopted parents, my parents were very progressive about it. They never hid the fact that I was adopted. I also have an adopted brother and an adopted sister. And they sought to make sure that we were raised in an environment where we were loved, you know, without limit. And equally that we were told that it was just a simple fact that my birth mother, the woman who gave birth to me, she was a very young girl, and that she just couldn't give me the kind of life that she really wanted to give me. And so she had reluctantly given me up for adoption. And, it's a very heartwarming story. And it's a story that I held on to in different guises until I was in my mid-30s. And then when I was a teenager, like a lot of teenagers, I guess, I perhaps trying to figure myself out, and knowing that I was adopted, I was like, I'd like to know my story of origin. And so I think I was about 19, and I went into the Catholic Protection and Rescue Society of Ireland, which in the late 90s changed its name to CUNAV on South Ann Street in Dublin, which is where I was adopted from. And I asked for some information. I went in looking for some, and they told me that they were prohibited from giving me much at all. So I think I was told what my birth name was, and literally that was it. And I went home, and then about a week later, I got a letter from them. And they said that by an incredible coincidence, my birth mother, for the first time since she gave me up for adoption, had gone into CUNAV, or the CPRSI at the time, the next day. And that really shook me. I'm not a big believer in magic or anything like that, but the coincidence really struck me. But my mother knew that I had gone in, and was, it caused a lot of, not distress is the wrong word, but it caused a lot of concern, and is like, and I felt terribly guilty. I felt terribly guilty that I would do this to my adopted parents. And so I left well enough alone. And then in my mid-30s, I got a letter again from CUNAV telling me that my birth mother had wanted to trace me. And so I felt absolutely, I was a grown-up at this stage. And so over the course of a couple of months, maybe, we exchanged letters through CUNAV, and then we eventually met. And I found, her name is Jane, and she was indeed young. She was 19 when she went into, this isn't key. I found out that I was born in St. Patrick's Mother and Baby Home on the Navan Road, which had previously called Pellettstown. And it was the largest mother and baby home in the state. And over the course of a couple of years, Jane and I just exchanged our stories to each other, and tentatively, with a huge amount of concern for each other's well-being. And what I found out was this. So she had gone in January 1968, 6 months pregnant. Before going in, she had signed a form giving me up for adoption. And that once I was born in April, she changed her mind and said, no, I want to keep him. And a nun told her she couldn't, she wasn't allowed, because she had signed this document. And so, as it happened, I was given up for adoption. And it was only afterwards that I found out that according to the Adoption Act, under which all adoptions are governed in the state, that was a lie. They told her a lie. That the terms of the Adoption Act say that a mother has until the baby is 6 months old in order, that consent is not granted until the baby is 6 months old. And the terrible, terrible irony of this is that my own mother, my adopted mother, said to me many times over the years that the worst months of her life were the 3 months after I was adopted. So I was adopted at 3 months because she knew she was waiting, like a huge giant clock ticking on the wall, waiting for these consent forms to be finally signed. And of course, Jane didn't know this. Mm. And so at the heart of, and I hasten to add, you know, I've had a good life. You know, I've had a very good life. Loving parents, loving siblings, a stable family, given plenty of opportunity. And yet, here I am in my mid-30s, and I'm discovering this terrible, terrible truth about the circumstances of my birth. And it's a truth that I have been trying to reconcile ever since. It's now nearly 20 years have gone by. And I'll be honest, this week has brought it all back up again. And I realize how difficult it is. If it's difficult for me, who had a conveniently or conventionally good life, I can't even begin to imagine what it's like for adopted children or birth mothers or adopted parents who perhaps things weren't so easy.
Go back to your Jane's experience. She was 19 when she went in, as you said, Fiona, St. Patrick's mother and baby home. What was her experience in St. Patrick's like? Do you know?
So Jane, as you said, 19 years old, she went in. She had nowhere else to go. And I think that's important, is that mother and baby homes existed as a not just a last refuge, but it, for the vast majority of these young women, the only refuge they had in a society that, as we know, deemed unwed pregnancy as a terrible sin and absolutely worthy of public rebuke. So she went in. Now, because she had been raised in part because of her parents, she had been raised in Lancashire, in Lytham. So she spoke with a Northern English accent, and still does. And the nuns, so there was about 100 girls in there, but the nuns, and in their words, were like, because of your educated accent, we're not going to put you to work in the for-profit laundry, which, you know, 90% of the girls. So what they did is they bedded her down in a kind of slightly warded off part of the ward, or a sectioned off part of the ward, with a number of other girls. And she was, like all the girls there, you had to work. And she worked in the nursery with the slightly older babies. Now, I hasten to add, not me. You know, she wasn't allowed. Contact between mother and newborn was strictly controlled, limited to just a couple of feeds a day. No breastfeeding, of course, was allowed. And what struck me was, is that the system itself was so villainous, you know, certainly looking back. And yet there was some kindnesses expressed, you know, because obviously it's easy to say, oh, that everybody who had any association with a mother and baby home is some kind of cartoon villain, which is clearly not the case. And so one of the stories that stuck with me is that there was an outbreak of viral gastroenteritis in the ward right after I was born, and I got it and nearly died, but obviously thankfully survived. And when putting in the drip, a sister, Elizabeth, said to Jane, and I was born with a big mop of curly hair, and she said, oh, we couldn't shave this beautiful head of hair. So rather than shave my head and put the drip in my shaven head, that they just put it at my hairline. And something like that has stayed with me for a very, very long time. But it also serves to remind me how little fundamentally I know about this, other than what Jane has told me, as I said, over a number of years of kind of exchanging our stories to each other.
Now, as you say, Fionn, you were adopted by a wonderful family, the Davenports. Mm. So why do you think these stories are still important, that they still need to be told?
Because adoption, under any guise, is not an easy thing. And it's something that all of my life, as a relatively self-motivated person, I would have denied that the circumstances of my birth would have had any adverse effect on me whatsoever. That because I was raised by two very loving parents in a stable family home, and I would have felt terribly guilty or terribly ashamed if I thought or if I felt that, you know, that at the risk of hyperbole, that I was somehow marked at birth. But over the years, I've done a ton amount of reading about this, and there's a, at the root of every adoption is this sense of loss, as you know, whether a parent, a child, a bond. And that bond is a kind of a mammalian instinct that's created at birth. And once you take that away, once you take a baby away from his or her mother, the baby is disoriented and instinctively all at sea. And automatically it generates a kind of a coping strategy. And that coping strategy manifests itself as a sense of mistrust. And so it can manifest itself in myriad ways, but broadly speaking, you're saying, you know, I'm not going to let anybody get too close in case they leave me, or I'm going to cling on for dear life in case that they do. And certainly I would have had an experience of this. And as I said, I was reluctant to concede that this had an effect on me, but it did. And when I read about it and I look at studies, particularly studies conducted in the US, you see that this is kind of general for the vast majority of adoptions. And when you take this, which is, you know, it's a difficult thing to negotiate anyway, but when you add that the experience of adoption for a solid 8 decades of the last century was conducted under this veil of shame, this veil of secrecy, and that, you know, that these uncompromising Catholic principles that underpinned this society that dictated, as I said, that young women who get pregnant out of wedlock aren't just guilty of a primal sin that needs to be expiated, but that in the olden days, and in fairness, this wasn't as true by the time I was born, that the 60s were much more progressive than decades past, but that they passed the seed of their transgression onto their progeny, and that because of their illegitimacy, that progeny is then condemned to a life of depravity. And this was the thinking that governed the way mother and baby homes operated. And you know, looking back on it now, and I'm loath to judge the morality of the past with the morality of the present, but by any standard, this is a grotesque ideology masquerading as a moral code, and I think so as a result, so the work of the commission, for instance, becomes so centrally important for us to recapture our stories. Those stories become not just important in a sense because I want to know my past, but of course I want to know my past, but in order to reclaim my present, I need to know my past. And I have spoken to many adopted children over the years, and we all share a version of this yearning.
Go on, Fionn.
I was going to say is that it's for this, I think, that when Minister Zappone, well, what is it, 5-6 years ago now, announced that this commission was going to look, I think for most of us who kept an eye on it, there was a sense of, is this the time we are not only going to get a chance to tell our stories, but to have our stories heard? And I think that that's the key.
And actually, people listening to you this morning, just bring you some of them, lots of reaction, Fionn. Veronica says, in tears listening to Fionn tell his adoption story on Mary, and thank you. Interestingly, another says, good morning, Mary. My sister had a baby boy in Bessborough in Cork in 1986. She agreed to an open adoption with the family who adopted her son. All she wanted was some photos down the years to reassure her he was being well cared for. The family reneged on the agreement as soon as she signed the adoption forms at 6 months. She contacted the social work in Bessborough, but they never got back to her. It's so unfair to her. I hope one day we get to meet him. And one last one. No, it wasn't the only refuge a pregnant girl had. Some parents faced the prejudices and raised their daughter and child. It wasn't easy, but some did. That's from Mary. Fionn, listen, thanks so much for telling us
That's
your story this
comment.
Morning.
Yeah.
Appreciate it very much. Mind yourself. Take care.